You have tuned into an encore presentation of Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening. It's Cascadia News Now for June, Ramadan Mubarak, and Happy Pride Month. I'm Stephanie Contouris with your hosts, Cascadia Weekly's Tim Johnson, host producer of American Carnage Report, Dave Willingham, and our special guest tonight, Whatcom County Councilman Sat Paul Sidhu. Welcome, Sat Paul.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. We have a lot to talk about on the docket tonight. Councilman Sidhu will talk candidly about his work for the environment, our county, and some of the prejudice he and his family shared as a Sikh and person of color. But first, let's get to a couple of quick Bellingham stories. I did want to touch on the fact that it is Bellingham's first hate crime. Just happened last Saturday. A man was verbally attacked, shoved on the ground. The attacker used hate speech relating to the presumed sexual orientation of the person he assaulted. No suspects have been arrested yet, but there has been a picture posted as the police are trying to identify the suspect. And we want to say a remembrance and a rest in peace to longtime veteran activist and peace worker Bill Disler. Tim, I think you had some interactions with Bill.
Well, Bill had written letters. He was an inveterate letter writer to publications. He was an activist in the community, very beloved. This week we have a tribute to him by one of his fellow members of the Veterans for Peace Chapter 111, Bellingham Chapter. His death was sudden. It came upon us quickly. He was diagnosed, and then he was gone. And you know, I was saying before the show opened that one of the tragedies of our society seems to be that we lose these people faster than we create them.
Wow. And when you see sometimes a lack of young people out who are on the peace vigil that happens every Friday, I think that there are more young people, but for a long time, it was the same people who had been out there every single week since Vietnam.
Right. And I'd like to push back on something you said, which was this was Bellingham's first hate crime. This is not Bellingham's first hate crime. Bellingham has a long and sad and sorry history.
I meant this year.
This
if
year.
I didn't say this year.
And Bill was, and Sat Paul, I think, I hope we can get into some of that. But Bill was also, he was a champion on those issues as well. He was an outspoken person. He was a person of great consciousness. And we're, our community's the lesser for not having him.
And we wish his family and all of the people who worked with him and loved him peace. And that's a rest in peace, Bill. And I want to move to Bellingham City Council. The Planning Committee had a work session this week on residential renter barriers, concerns, looking for new locations for a homeless shelter. I spoke with Councilman Gene Knutson today. He said analyst Mark Gardner was looking at what other cities have done. And there's a lot of insurance barriers, but the thing that got me the most excited is that the committee and the council are going to be focusing on income discrimination in terms of rentals. And go ahead.
Right, and I listened in on some of the conversation. Bellingham City Council will announce this probably later, but they're having a town hall next week, next Tuesday at Bellingham High School Auditorium, 6:30, to address some of these issues. But it is, I mean, if you're a young person and you're just getting up on your feet, you have to put down a damage deposit. Some places ask for first, last month's rent. It's an enormous burden on somebody that's just getting started, just trying to find a place to live. And I think the city is correct and right for looking at these barriers that prevent people from finding equitable housing in Bellingham.
And you're absolutely correct. I do want to add or embroider on what you said, and that you don't have to be a young person, especially in our economic situation, that I know we struggled when we had to move a couple years ago when everybody in my household was working part-time jobs, and it did not look good on paper, even though we're very responsible. I know women who are powerful community members who struggle repeatedly because they have part-time jobs or they're paid very poorly. And the fact that the planning committee is going to work on this is, it's a really exciting step. It doesn't take care of everything, but it's a huge step.
Well, it's a big part of addressing the issue of homelessness. You know, King County just released their survey of homeless people, and almost half of them are homeless because of some economic circumstance. They lost their job, they couldn't afford a rent increase, and if we're not addressing this part of the overall homelessness problem, it doesn't matter how much good we do in other areas.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent observation, is that the issue of homelessness is on a spectrum, and it's on the spectrum of affordability and barriers and anything that comes along that gets in the way of that contributes to the problem.
Actually, I just posted an article from Utah. A gentleman has reduced the homelessness in Pendleton, I think his name is Pendleton, by 91%. And one of the quote is that when we ignore people who have drug issues or mental issues, we create more problems. People think this is throwing the money away. And this is the first thing. He was on the other side of the spectrum before. And when he really looked into the problem, he saw what needed to get done. And within very few years, that he's changed it entirely. It's actually on the internet or on my Facebook page if somebody want to read it. It's very interesting to see how people are being innovative about homelessness and can make a difference.
And Satpal, what you're talking about leads right back to the homeless shelter that the city of Bellingham had planned, that was a wet shelter where people who suffer from substance use issues and people who are challenged by issues of alcoholism and remember it is a disease and yet are further compounded by no place to live and no shower. And so again, Tim Johnson mentioned this, but there is a housing city council town hall. It is this Tuesday, June 13th at 6:30 p.m. at Bellingham High School. This is your opportunity to both learn and weigh in on Bellingham's housing crisis. They need your voices. If you want to learn more about it, you can go to COB.org, stands for City of Bellingham. The last thing that we want to talk about in terms of the City of Bellingham this week is a huge shout out to Councilwoman Pinky Vargas. She brought the Paris Agreement question to the City Council after our federal administration turned it down. And as you may know, many people, including the mayor of Pittsburgh, like to shout out, but many people and many cities and many counties are signing on and saying, we will honor this agreement. And Mayor Linville was already on the list of mayors who had signed on to support, but Councilwoman Vargas brought it to the Bellingham City Council, unanimously supported signing the open letter to the international community affirming Bellingham's support, climate action to meet the Paris Agreement. I also want to mention that our delegation, at least our local representation for our federal delegation, made some very strong statements about the withdrawal of the Paris Agreement. Representative Rick Larson said, withdrawing from the accord is a grave mistake. Susan DelBene said, Trump's withdrawal from the agreement will endanger our children's health, their future, and the planet. Even Dave Reichert, a Republican, was opposed, although some of our East Side Republicans still supported it. And shout out to Governor Jay Inslee, who said, Washington State will lead when Washington, D.C. lets us down.
Right. And, you know, I guess I would say that Pinky was the first out of the starting gate, but every council person up there was just ready to jump on that and wanted to be the first to introduce it. And it was unanimous across the spectrum. And you know, I think it's the point of it is when we say we're going to do something, we need to honor our agreements and not back off from that. And there was no compelling reason to back out of that agreement. And I think a lot of people across the spectrum found that to be kind of offensive. Our word is our bond.
I think that, you know, one thing we don't have to dishearten, there's 7 billion people and 300 million people, or maybe a little more, getting out of this thing. There's a whole world, globe, who's really concentrated on that problem. And this may be temporary. It takes 4 years for us to get out. So there's still a chance.
Absolutely. And Tim, you talk about honoring agreements, and I feel like that's a recurring theme in our town and in our region, especially as it relates to our Lummi and Nooksack nations. And even though it's a national story, just want to share the alert that Native American healthcare is also on the chopping block in terms of revising the ACA. And please consider calling your representatives. That's all I'm going to say about that. But Satpal, you bring up an excellent point. I also want to talk about or introduce people who are going to talk about the fact that when the people in charge and the white majority talk about environment, a lot of times the intersectionality of environmental issues and racial and poverty issues get left out. Our citizen journalist, Liz Darrow, spoke with Junga Subedar and Edgar Franks about the Paris Accord, the climate change movement, and systemic racism.
I'm Edgar. I'm formerly with Community Development, but I also volunteer with the Racial Justice Coalition and Redline Salish Sea.
I'm Junga Subedar, and I'm with the Racial Justice Coalition, CDC, and the Welcome Civil Rights Project. Racism is not about individuals. It's systemic. So I think that the majority of people in this world are very compassionate and loving and feel distraught when they see someone else suffering or injustice. But injustice and suffering comes from systemic problems, not from bad people necessarily. There are obviously some bad people, but I think we have very flawed systems and institutions that need to be corrected. And that's what we see. And that affects people on an individual level. It affects the quality of life and sometimes our relationships. But I think that's, we need to go back to that racism is a systemic problem. So we need to address it on a systemic level. And when we talk about it in those terms and not take it as an individual thing or a personal judgment.
For me, Trump pulling out of the Paris Accord and the from that came out of the COP21, that's been something that's on my mind. How we talk about climate is in the past has been very limited. And I think Junga brought up a good point about how we have to talk about race. Especially when we talk about climate and what is climate justice, because usually people of color, poor people, indigenous people are the ones that are at the forefront and on the front lines that are feeling the full brunt of climate change right now. And regarding this whole COP21 and pulling out of the Paris Accord, even though it didn't go far enough, it was a half measure, but now this half measure is going to be rolled back, and it's going to really hurt all the people that are already hurting. It's going to even accelerate the problem even more, whereas before maybe it could buy us some time to figure out what a real solution. And I think this was also one of the critiques that came out of the Paris Accord from people from the grassroots, that this accord didn't go far enough. If there's going to be an agreement, then it should go all the way. You know, we have to talk about the systemic issues that are perpetuating climate injustice, environmental injustice. And I look at the system that's holding it up and keeping us from having real justice. Of course, the system that's affecting us right now, it's a system that thrives on racism and white supremacy and imperialism. That's how we got here in the first place. So we have to have that historical analysis and context. But, you know, at the same time, this is not the end of it. You know, this opens up an opportunity for people in the communities to address climate change at the local level, knowing that the federal government is climate deniers, and they're looking for the interest of fossil fuel companies. And I know the majority of our people in our community care for the environment and care about race and having a good economy, strong economy. So this is opens up an opportunity for us to have those real conversations about what climate justice and what does action look like at the local level.
One of the reasons why we haven't addressed climate change and climate justice more effectively is because of racism. There's a very big disconnect in our culture between white people and people of color, because even though the U.S. is very diverse, it is very segregated. Communities of color, just like our community here in Whatcom County and Bellingham, is very segregated. There are generally white, wealthy people in their neighborhoods, and then there are people of color that are generally poor in their neighborhoods. And they live vastly different lives, and they deal with different things. They worry about different things. So these are good people that don't know each other. I think that's why we have a hard time understanding each other's issues. That's why we have continued injustice and abuses of the environment and lack of funding for public education for all of our children, not just some of our children in Edgemoor or in Lake Whatcom, but in Birchwood, in the Roosevelt neighborhood, and North Bellingham. So I think that we have a lot of work to do because I think even when we have best intentions, we are in two different worlds in the U.S. And we need to start coming together if we're going to solve these issues, because it's not just people of color, it's not just white people, they're not separate issues. We have to work together to solve these issues, because as I said in the beginning, I feel like these are systemic issues.
So in this moment that we're living in right now, I think there's a lot of people that want to do something totally different than has been in the past. And I think that's one of the appealing things of what the Racial Justice Coalition is doing, what C2C is doing, Red Line Salish Sea, like this kind of coalitions or kind of grassroots movements that are based on solidarity and direct action. I think this is filling a void that's in the community, knowing that everything that we've tried in the past got us to where we're at right now, where, you know, it's perfectly normal now to talk to have fascist people saying whatever they want freely, and people saying, "Oh, that's their right. It's okay for them to be like that." You know, whereas we take the stand where that's not acceptable, and that's something we can't normalize. I think it's drawing a lot of people's attention because of the way that we're approaching and trying to resolve these issues and head on. And it's being led by the people that are the most impacted. And at the same time, it's opening up the space to talk about what leadership is. Is leadership city council and the mayor and that's it? Or, you know, is there another way of building community leadership? And I think that's one of the things that we're offering to the people. We're presenting an opportunity for people to participate and address these issues from a grassroots perspective.
Junga Subedar and Edgar Frank speaking with our citizen journalist Liz Darrow on the Paris Accord and how it relates to climate change, systemic racism. If you want to learn more about the grassroots movement on intersectionality of racism, poverty, and climate change, seek out Community to Community, the Bellingham Racial Justice Coalition, and Red Line Salish Sea online or on their Facebook pages. And we're talking about some pretty big issues and issues that get left out. And Sat Paul, I think you had something to say about that.
Yeah, like during the break, we were talking about that I have a different experience. You know, I grew up in a totally different country, you know, it was a very poor country in those days, and I grew up in that, and had the opportunity of my lifetime to be able to come to this country, and I'm so happy in every moment that I have this opportunity and came here. But I have some disappointment that what I saw 40 years ago is we are losing it, is the art of dialogue. You know, we can be civil and still disagree with people and still push your arguments and try to convince others. I think that what has happened over the last few years, especially, is really to our detriment. So I just want people to know that.
Well, St. Paul, I have a little anecdote, and there's a question at the end of it. But I remember one of your very first statements on county council was an impassioned plea to the agricultural community that you are their representative.
Yes.
And your frustration that they had not called you. And we've talked on this show before about how farmers are conservative people.
Yes.
But I think you're a conservative
yes.
person. You're very much interested in agriculture. You represent agriculture. Has that improved? Has that cohort began to communicate with you and begin to treat you as if you are their representative on county council?
I think I have made some inroads in that. I can't totally say that because, you know, like just I said, that we are so afraid of what my friends would say. If I talk to so-and-so, I'm seen having coffee with so-and-so. We are so worried about that. But, you know, I come from a farming community, and there are a lot of berry farmers are Sikhs, and I converse with them. So that gives me an inroad. And I have made a lot of friends. I go to Egg Water board meetings. I have sit down with them and spend time on critical areas ordinance. I spent 2-3 hours with them on comprehensive plan. I went to their office. I said, look, I will come there. So I think I'm building some rapport with them. But still, the hesitance of North County and South County, we need to break that barrier somehow.
Well, one of the reasons that we have you on, going back to the intersectionality of environment and people of color and racism, we have you on because recently you were slurred, and you were slurred both in a way that called into question your environmentalism, but hidden within that, and not as hidden as it could have been, but there was a question about your citizenship.
Yes.
Sapo, how
yes.
long have you lived in Whatcom County?
30 years.
And it's got to be frustrating yeah. that to this date, no other county council person yeah. has ever had their citizenship
yeah.
question.
I think, you know, being a public person, you come under scrutiny. I think that's a fair game, and people can ask questions or question me. I'm totally happy to answer that. You know, after that comments, my son asked me, and he is a grown-up person. He only where he lived is Whatcom County, and he went to Meridian Schools and works in Whatcom County. He said, Dad, tell me how many years I have to live or how many generations I have to live before people want to ask me for my citizenship. That totally floored me. That a young person who has so many friends, so many, all his life has been here, and he saw his dad humiliated, and he couldn't take it. And I think that there are other instances where other people are this, but this is something happened to me, and I can really relate to that.
Well, St. Paul, you a couple of years ago told me a very charming story about the early days of the Sikh berry growers in Whatcom County and how they could not sell their product.
Yeah.
And one farmer in Whatcom County had faith, would secretly go out and he would sell their product out
yes.
there, because what he understood was that when the agricultural community is strong, then everybody benefits.
Yeah.
And from that, you've got this very, very unique and interesting community of Sikh farmers in the county. Maybe you can share that story.
Yeah, I mean, just imagine that 25 years ago, excuse me, 25 years ago, when Sikh farmers came, they were buying 5-10 acres, and I had a lot of other farmer friends, you know, the local white farmers, and they would say, Satpal, your people are crazy. They don't know nothing about berries. I said, no. They know about the dirt. They know about earth. They know about growing. It doesn't have to be berries. And just in 20 years, 50% of the total berry farmers in Whatcom County are Sikhs. I mean, that shows their hard work, their commitment, and their skills. So just like, you know, making comments without knowing, but the people are, they put their head down, they didn't care about the comments, they didn't care about what people said, they just worked hard. And now they're working on their second generation, and we have now farmers, kids who are born here, and they're taking. And to me, it's a very proud moment.
Well, you talk about how our dialogue has changed and how we relate to one another has changed. Mm-hmm. And I totally agree with that, but I feel like I'm kind of at a loss.
Mm-hmm.
When something happens like happened to you,
yeah.
I feel like I want to react in kind.
Yes.
And I feel that would be inappropriate.
Yes. Yes.
What? How can I react and how can I show?
I think I'll tell you one thing. I was very tempted when I saw the things on the Facebook, and my wife is more panicked than I am. I said, look, you know, there's nothing to be found. So I don't want to get into the mud with them. Yes, if there is a reasonable thing, I will do that. And very first day when this first comment was written, I answered it. I think I answered 90% of the questions in 5 lines. But people didn't like it. They wanted me to be in the mud and throwing and back and forth. I said, no. And then the opportunity came that Northwest Citizen, they got a whole bunch of documents and files and things. And it was only fair for them to make a phone call. I said, whenever you want to come. So they came, and we spent hour and a half. They had like 2 pages list of questions. And after about first 20 minutes, they said, I don't think we need to ask anything more. I said, no. You should ask everything you have written, you know. So, and I commend them that they did their own research. No, they did not just listen to me. They went back and they dig up all the documents. The same documents everybody has, I have the same documents. I won't be saving things for 25 years ago that someday I'm going to need to say this thing.
Right. And I want to say one of the things that was frustrating, and we don't want to give too much credence to this.
Yeah.
It's a non-issue. But the fact that you, of all people, were impugned with this anti-environmental message when are such a model environmentalist.
Yes. Yes.
And I see on Facebook, you post about solar issues all the time.
Actually, my whole career has been this, and this may be some news to a lot of people. The tree oil industry is a recycling industry. It's actually the tree which comes out of the tree when you make pulp. It's organic oil, pure organic tree oil. That was the name, tree oil. And normally it is burned in the boilers just as a fuel. So this company, when presented to me their plan and all this, that they will take that and actually refine it into rosin, into, you know, all the beauty products, all the chewing gum, all the other edible things are made out of that crude tall oil. So that was recycling. After that, my next larger job was with Valvoline Oil. We were collecting 100 million gallons of waste oil, used oil from the cars, and recycling. It was like cradle to grave. And I worked in that industry for 7 years. The company promised that if we give you 1 gallon of oil, we'll recycle the same gallon. And it was in Anacortes. I have never left this town. Right? And that was recycling. And then after that, I became dean at Bellingham Tech, and that was a great job. And I don't want to go into that detail, but my next job was president of a solar company. So I am an environmentalist from the day one.
And it sounds like you're a job creator, too.
Yeah.
And I just want to remind everyone that you are listening to Cascadia News Now. That was Tim Johnson just chirping in there. Our guest tonight is County Councilman Satpal Sidhu, and Dave Willingham is here with me, Stephanie Contouris. We are just at the top of the hour, and we do want to spend a little bit more time on your environmental background before we move on. Tim, I think you had a question.
No, I just had an observation. I think that we'll probably get into this a bit, but there is a question that I have for you about how the current people who are in District 2 got together and sort of tried to figure out how to make themselves available for various offices without a collision in the future. And that was something I wanted to get into you with, is that I think a decision was made because you and Todd Donovan understood that you guys might be primaried out of office in a hostile district down the road. And that's why Todd, after 2 years, he has 4 years on the council, after 2 years, is up for re-election now. Is that kind of what's happened?
So yes, it is kind of happened. And I initially thought that I should run again. And I did announce back in February that I'll be running from District 3. But as I was doing this planning, and of course I talked to my friends and my party and other people, and we thought that it may be better and that somebody else can run from the 3rd District. And then Rebecca came over, and I got a message from Rebecca that she would like to run, but if Satpal is running, she will not dare to run.
Rebecca Boonstra.
Mm-hmm. And I had coffee with Rebecca. We spent more than an hour. I listened to her views, what she would be doing, and I thought she is a great candidate. And I said, Rebecca, if you really are inclined and willing to work hard, this is not an easy thing. Just announce, it's very hard work. And if you're willing to do that, I will withdraw.
Right.
And she said, I need some time. I said, you can take your time. And then Todd thought that it will be good that he would decide and to run, and that made no sense for me to run again. So it just worked out.
Right. My understanding of this, just to maybe elaborate a little bit for listeners, is that you and Todd did not want to run head to head.
Yes.
In a district that is a difficult district for progressives.
Yes.
Difficult district for current council people.
Yes.
And the risk was to lose potentially a council person because of that collision.
Yes, and that's exactly right. And I think Todd, the qualities Todd brings to the council, his expertise, his thinking, long-term planning, and the amount of time he puts into, including his regular day job. I'm kind of semi-retired. I have more time, but I really commend that. And I would like to see that Todd on the council with me. And I would like to stay there as well.
Well, however, let's talk about Amy Glasser, because that is who Todd is running against. And Amy declared a couple of months ago, and she has been working really hard on building support for her campaign, which is representing the New South Bellingham, and is a very clearly progressive area in the new 5-district makeup. And she is one of the Bernie people who came out of this movement of let's take back our own counties. Let's work on the local level. Let's make change on the local level. So it's going to be an interesting race.
No, I'm glad that Amy stepped up and is running. I think that it's going to be a very interesting campaign. Yeah.
And so with a quick transition, we want to go to you, Dave, because, and I cannot tell you how much I hate saying these words, that we are still in special session number 2 on the Washington State Legislature and spending a whole lot of money per day. And Dave, please tell me there's some good news coming out of Olympia.
Well,
yikes.
There was good news today. The Senate has scheduled meetings for next week. They're going to be meeting on the 12th, and just saw the agendas come out for that. So there's some action there. There has been a limited amount of activity. Our own Doug Erickson introduced a bill that would modify the Model Toxics Control Act.
Oh, that's right, because he's back now.
He's back now. And I'm going to be honest, it's, you know, about 45 pages, and I got 12 in, and I said I will read this again if it makes it out of committee. And, you know, there's a lot of silliness and grandstanding happening. There's Luann Van Werven and Vincent Bies have signed on to a bill to privatize Evergreen State College.
Wow.
And a member of the House from Shoreline has introduced a bill to pursue single-payer health care in this state. A lot of stuff that's not going anywhere, but we're at that, you know, crazy time.
Dave, how can people be introducing bills at this stage? I mean, is that even possible?
There's this thing called a cutoff. What happened to that?
We're in overtime. You know, rules don't apply anymore. And, you know, because we're at the halfway point, if we don't have an education plan by next week, we're going to be in triple overtime. Mm-hmm. So I think that it's a little easier right now for stuff to get to the floor because this is a good grandstanding time. This is where people can come out later and say, well, I introduced a thing that wasn't going to go anywhere, but it looks good that I said it. There is, in addition to our deadline, there are some other deadlines that are coming up that are very important that we're not addressing. The federal government has issued a extension for Washington State and the Real ID issue, which, you know, if you have the wrong ID from Washington State, you can't board a plane. You can't. It doesn't count as ID for other federal purposes. Our extension is only till mid-July, so hopefully we'll get a fix through for that.
I thought that there was that they had pushed that back another year.
They have not. We have until mid-July to have a fix, and it's graduation season. And in 2009, the state legislature passed a new set of rules about standardized testing. They would have tests for, math, language skills, and biology, and you had to pass them in order to graduate. 2 years ago, they put that biology one on hiatus for 2 years. So there's a bunch of students now who are going to be walking in their graduation, but they don't know if they're going to get their diploma because they still have to pass that unless the legislature does something about it, which they haven't yet and may not.
Holy cow.
Well, you mentioned a fix, and I guess I have to ask because we're all in tenterhooks in Whatcom County about this, but how about the fix for rural wells, that issue? Where is that now?
That is nowhere. That is absolutely nowhere. The closest thing to actually getting any of that done is still backed up behind the education plan. Negotiators are meeting every day now, every business day, and they are allegedly, the rumor is that they have agreed on how much they're going to spend on our education fix in this state and very little else.
So, Paul, why is this thing important? Why is it important to have a fix about Hearst for Whatcom County?
I think that I would want to repeat what I said in the council. And the first thing is Hearst didn't cause the problem. That's a wrong statement. He highlighted, I mean, this problem has been existing, and since this thing has happened in the last few months, I've been reading documents going back to 1995. I don't claim that I read everything, but I have seen the major steps that county has been taking. So this has been happening since 1995, then a year 2000, 2005. Planning unit has done recommendations, and when it came to head in 2013, the council at that time said, we don't like what GMA has said.
You know, Growth Management Act.
Growth Management Act, right? And we want to take it to the court. We took it to the court, and now the decision, the Hearst decision, it says that what GMA said in 2013 was right. So it's not the new problem has come up. It's the problem we had for a long time. And we want it to disappear and continue that way. So that's the first thing. It needs clarity. And the second thing is the issue with the farmers and the irrigation water, which is even bigger than wells, is that there is a law, use it or lose it. Now, back in 1937, that was a great law. they wanted farmers to, you know, irrigate more and do this and grow the land and all this, right? But now it's caught up with us, and the farmers are afraid if you put a meter on them. And, you know, and we need to look in totality. We cannot fix one little thing and think that it does not affect anything. So Hearst fix, whatever we get from legislature, is not going to be perfect. It's going to be 39 different versions of that. Because each county has their own situation. And I have advocated we, all the stakeholders, we should sit down together and we should go back to the legislature or the Supreme Court or whosoever, say, this is the solution we want. Please bless it.
Well, Sat Paul, is there a best hope that, I mean, we're all a little frustrated yes. with Olympia, but is there a best hope that we can
I think with? The best hope is that I don't want them to say everything is the same because we still exasperate this problem. I want them to come up with some clever solutions and give more powers to the local government, local groups, to come up with solutions which they can bless, rather than one solution fits all. That would not fit. What we fit for Whatcom County is not good for Yakima or not good for even Skagit.
Would you say it's accurate to say that all of the 39 counties, they want the state's involvement, they want some predictability across so that each county is not by itself and not each county is not on the hook for some kind of litigation, but that the state, and we're talking about the State Department of Ecology, is an arbiter of a lot of these 39 plans that you're talking about?
Definitely, definitely, definitely. Because we cannot have this chaos, you know, and same farmer can own farms in two different counties, two different rules and laws. No, that would never work. I think we do need state to that, but at the same time, create some freedom for local work groups, local stakeholders, to come up with that and give them that freedom to decide. If we just say top down only, that doesn't work either. So I totally think that there should be an overarching direction and guidance from the state, and we work within that.
And before we leave legislature, there's one thing I want to talk about, and this is, you know, came up today. Jay Inslee has signed an executive order directing the relevant state agencies to start promoting autonomous vehicles in Washington State, and formed a working group to help develop that, and is setting up plans for permitting and getting autonomous vehicles on the road. And this is a big deal if you like autonomous vehicles, because they don't work in the rain yet. And if they're ever going to work up here, we're going to have to start soon.
And by autonomous vehicles, you're talking about like the Google self-driving cars,
right?
Which would be right down yes. your alley,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Is this part of the robot revolution?
This yeah. is, you know, a step down the road. I don't think it's, you know, quite revolution yet.
I think that that's what I call it. The future is coming, ready or not, right? And what Tesla is doing with the battery storage. And what is happening, you know, to give you an example of a car, within 10 years, there will be house shops, because you can take a current existing car, gut the fuel system, gut the exhaust system, gut all other systems in there, and just have a platform. You need one computer, one motor, one battery, and that can fit in like quarter of the space we have it in the front, right? And all you do is plug in. The software you can download and put it on your computer. That's all you have to do. I can tell you that I remember my kid was into rebuilding cars. And, you know, go back 30, 40 years, that was a big pride. Take an old truck and fix it. I think it's going to become so simple that there will be people making cars. They will take a car body, and rest is available to you on Amazon.com, you know? So we should look into that. We should not ignore it. And same goes for the fuel. Tesla just had a study done, and they said that 8 years, it will start impacting the sale of gasoline to the electricity. It's that soon.
It's very exciting, and I really wish I still had my dad's 69 Impala.
Yeah.
And it's not a 6.4, though.
People call, have written comments, doom and gloom, why you're promoting. it's not me. I cannot stop it. Don't give me that much credit. I don't have that power to stop oil companies to do something different. They already know. They're just not telling us. They already know what their plan is for 10 years from today. It's us who have put our head in the sand and not realizing. Things are going to happen. Internet came. People said, IBM said, home PC is a hobby thing. And they lost Microsoft. The head of IBM didn't give credence to Mr. Gates at that time. He said, this is the thing, yeah, you want to put it on a computer, yeah, you should call it. It used to be called IBM PC, you know? And look what happened within very short, our lifetime. And this is even getting squished.
And it's huge for us in Washington State.
Yes.
We have a small but growing solar industry.
Yeah.
And it's very, very exciting.
We have the largest hydroelectric power than a lot of other states.
Well, shifting the topic, but not the thrust of it, but on the issue of prognostication, the other big issue that's facing county council now is the issue of jail.
Yes.
And the sorts of remarkable changes that are coming in terms of crime rates, alternatives to incarceration. We have home detention that uses GPS so that all law enforcement knows exactly where they are, so why are they in jail? And you all are dealing with that right now, and I just wanted to ask you about that while we have you on the air.
Yes, and this is, again, I have went back to 2002 since we started talking about new jail. And a couple of things. One thing is, I have made a statement in the council as well that the only biggest factor which matters is technology, which we are not taking into account all of our plans. That is the biggest disruptor which will happen to us 30 years. The brick and mortar, you know, we are talking about number of beds. And I made a statement, no matter what you do, you are 50 beds wrong.
Why is that?
Because there is no way you can predict, is 384 right number or 428 is the right number, because how the crimes happen, we can just depend on whatever has been in the past and predict something. But if somebody says, I can tell you exactly this much jail should be, it's not possible. So why spend time on that?
You, and it was your recommendation that the proposed levy window for a jail initiative not be forever, but only 30 years.
Yes, I even less. I am very big favorite. My favorite is sunset clause. I think we make rules and never forget about them. And then we make another rule. Then we make another rule. And somebody goes to the court and they pull out, in 1977, this rule was passed. So, and we are fighting that. I think that as a governance, before that we had paper records. Now everything is on the internet and digital. I think something we need to change in our governance and all the way up to the federal government is that we should have sunset clause. Even if it is a good rule, which we should do, all we have to do is pick up your hand, say, we give another 20 years.
Well, and I just want to remind you, you're listening to Cascadia News Now with the fantastic guest, County Councilman from Whatcom County Council, Satpal Sidhu, along with Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and I'm Stephanie Contours. Now, before we get into restructuring government entirely, which is a different show, but a worthy show, you made a statement about arguing about the number of beds is not useful because we will always be wrong.
Yeah.
And you alluded to the conversation we should be having is about technology.
Yes.
Will you expand on that? How does that look?
Yes. I think that what we should do is technology can impact that number of people and how we deal with them. So we should not jump on to make a big jail. To me, big and small jail is different if we are talking 400 and somebody is talking 600 or 800. That, to me, is totally out of range. When we are between 400 to 500 beds, and that includes the 36 other beds in there, then we are in the range. And I'm going to let public decide and give us the input, and I'm okay with that.
Now, those 36 beds, I'm sorry to interrupt, but those 36 beds are for mental health behavioral health treatment.
Behavioral health, including that. To me, if you take out 50 beds from the budget, the savings are minuscule. If you add 50 beds to the budget, your cost is minuscule. The biggest issue is how we are funding it. I think that I did a quick calculation today that we will be collecting the jail cost $110 million. The bonds will be pay off with $202 or $210 million. But we are collecting $380 million in tax from people because a supposedly law that 40% has to go to cities and 60% county and city. So to me, if we are telling people that we should have a jail tax, then it should be truly a jail tax. I mean, that's what I would like to ask people and promote that.
Is it going to go on the ballot, Sat Paul? Do you have enough votes on the council to put this on the ballot?
I don't know. I think there are a lot of people on the fence. And general feeling is that we do need a jail because the current jail is pathetic. I think it's a life sentence to the deputies who work there, not the people who come there for a month and leave. It's those people who go there every day and years and years of their lives. That place is not safe. That place is not sanitary. That place is not adequate. And we cannot fix it like a 30-year-old car and give it a makeover.
Well, and a lot of people are completely anti a new jail without enough services in place that are our jail alternatives.
And I totally support that. I think that even last year when we did this task force, we committed $10 million to the triage center. And I think there is some limitation on that we cannot have more than 18 beds or 16 beds because of some federal law and we will lose that money. I would like to see three of those facilities, not at one place, maybe there one or two in the county and two in Bellingham or one out in the county. And that's the story in Utah I mentioned, that they took care of those people. And the jail reduction, homeless reduction, all these benefits we get as a society are totally enormous. And I totally commit that there should be more money committed, even from this tax. There should be more money committed as a line item on the budget.
So we can do that.
And that's this triage center you're talking about. This is a mechanism whereby county health people can study, engage people, and determine by their behavior whether they really require incarceration or whether it's inappropriate to incarcerate them or whether they need to go on to some sort of into some sort of therapeutic court. That's what it does.
Correct. Yes.
So you are listening to Cascadia News Now, and we will be right back with Sat Paul Sidhu right after this.
My name's Michael Park, and every week on the International Americana Music Show, I'll be playing a selection of the best Americana music made solely by non-American artists, whether it's alt-country from Australia, newgrass from Norway, or singer-songwriters from South Africa. There'll be music and interviews with Americana artists from a lot of countries that may surprise you. So join me every week for an hour-long musical trip across countries and continents on the International Americana Music Show.
International Americana, Fridays at 8 p.m. and Wednesdays at 10 p.m. on KMRE 102.3 FM. Got a kid who loves science and technology? Bring them to the Spark Museum Robotics Workshop for a great introduction to the basics of robotics using Lego Mindstorms. Each session meets Tuesday to Friday from 10:30 a.m. till noon. Session 1 is June 20th to 23rd. Session 2 is June 27th to 30th. Pre-registration is required. Fees and other information are online. Go to the Spark Museum of Electrical Information and click Learn. Cascadia News Now, I'm Stephanie Contouris with Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and County Councilman Sat Paul Sidhu. We've been talking about a lot of specifics that we hear And we're focused on right now the water well issue, the jail. But let's broaden the scope. And Satpal, if you could just tell us a little bit more in general terms, what is your hope and what's your vision for Whatcom County's future?
I think my hope and my vision for Whatcom County is that we should increase our dialogue. There are issues which affect all of us equally, no matter which party, which group, which likings you have, where you live, they all affect us equally. And I think we are not paying attention, because the way I look at it is there are three type of issues. One is we'll never agree. Gun control, abortion. So let's spend a little less time on that and just agree to disagree that we're not going to solve those things. But then there are issues where people feel differently, but we can still come up with some reasonable compromise, like we talked about jail. This is not an issue. I think people have strong feelings, but still, the fundamental thing is we need some solution, and we should come up with that. And those are the issues. The third issues are, which are totally common and affect us all in the same way. I'll give you an example. Why does healthcare cost us so much? It's not a partisan issue. About like increasing family wage jobs in Whatcom County. That's not a partisan issue. You know, we should not pit that petroleum jobs are better or the only jobs we want and the solar jobs are bad or vice versa. That's a defeating argument for our kids. I think there is a curve. There's new technologies come, they take over, old technologies fade away, and we should recognize that. And we should sit as common citizens and solve this problem for everybody. Who doesn't want a family wage job? Same thing, big debate about minimum wage. You know, tell me that about Kentucky or Louisiana, the $7 wage, and we had like $10 wage, and we make it like 12 now, 11 or 12. Are people dying on the street because their jobs have gone? Like, is that what the outcome has been? Or Kentucky is really flourishing because they have $7 job? I think that we have made a spiral to the bottom, and we all suffer. But argument-wise, we just raise our arms and go emotionally with that. We need to cool down. Think what is in the best interest of everybody. Those are the issues. My wish is that we are able to sit across the table with all these people and argue and discuss and come up with solutions. Because otherwise, this will keep getting worse and worse. And we all suffer.
And Satpal, I think what you're talking about is in all of our hearts at this table, at least.
Yes.
But it's an entirely new ball of wax in terms of the history of partisan politics and why we're fighting and why having those issues might be advantageous, you know, to certain parties. But unfortunately, we are just about out of time, so we will have to have you back.
Okay.
And we have been having a really great and in-depth conversation with you. Thank you so much, County Councilman Satpal Sidhu. And I just want to give a couple of heads up about things that are coming up. As we talked about earlier, the City Council is hosting a town hall on homelessness and housing. And that's Tuesday, June 13th at 6:30 p.m. at Bellingham High School. And you can learn and also weigh in, give your opinion on Bellingham's housing crisis. COB.org is the address for that if you want to learn more information. The Port Commissioners want to know what you think should be the focus of the Port of Bellingham after their recent decisions. They're hosting a coffee with a commissioner. There are going to be two. There's one on the 21st, I think, is the next one in Ferndale at 7:30 p.m. Oh, there's one tonight at 7:30 p.m. So go to the Port of Bellingham for more information. And finally, there is a City Council debate on Thursday at 6 p.m., and that is at the Bellingham Public Library, and that will be about city candidates and passport candidates. You have been listening to Cascadia News Now. I'm Stephanie Contours. With me was Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, Satpal Sidhu. Big thanks to our engineer, Devlin Sweeney, and our technical director, Dave Willingham. A special shout out and thank you to citizen journalist Liz Darrow, as well as Chunga Subedar and Edgar Franks. And this has been Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM, Bellingham.